Welcome to the special edition of What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. The killing of George Floyd, a black man from Minneapolis, by a police officer was like pouring gasoline on a smoldering fire.
As many of us watched the protests grow across the country and the world,
you may have found yourself wondering, how did we get here? And hopefully now you're asking, how can we move forward together? Along with peaceful protests in support of the Black Lives Matter movement, many activists have been encouraging people to read up on the subjects of systemic racism and racial justice. To learn, be informed, and think about what race means in this global modern world, what it means for you and for others. To that extent, there has been an outpouring of book lists you can easily find online, but I turned to some of our local experts. I recently spoke to some professors at Bemidji State University who research and teach to the issues of race and diversity and social justice. And in this next hour, we'll be hearing their recommendations along with some context and perspectives on the books and these issues.
The man. Hello, my name is Rucha Ambikar. I am an assistant professor of sociology at Bemidji State University. And I'm here talking about how to understand race and racism in the United States. This is front and center part of my job. Nearly every semester I teach a course called Race and Ethnic Relations. And this course is sort of one of the two or three really important pieces in our BA in sociology, where we talk about intersectional concerns. And so very quickly, what intersectional means is we try and understand all of the various identities and all of the various group associations that may affect people negatively. So we study things like race, gender, sexuality, social class, and then together as a curriculum, what we're trying to do is understand why is there inequality in the world, and then address it through a critical perspective where we are trying to see how can we fix it. So in that sense, I would say social justice is sort of the central theme in what we teach in sociology. So I'm here talking today because, like I said, I teach race and ethnic relations as a class. And every time I teach it, I focus on things slightly differently, of course, depending on who's in the class and things like that. But one of the themes of my teaching at Bemidji State University has been to focus on the fact that I'm teaching largely at what we call a predominantly white institute, in that it means that we are located demographically in an area where most of our students are white. And so one of the ways in which I teach race and racism is not simply to talk about the injustices and the inequalities as minorities may be facing them, but to center whiteness as an identity. And sometimes this is a bit startling because people don't necessarily come to class thinking whiteness itself is a racial identity. And so part of the conversation is to understand how being white actually also is going to be benefiting from the current racial inequality, right? And so to understand whiteness itself as a race, because many of my students will come to class and think, oh, I never thought I particularly should have to think about race because isn't my life just normal? And so that's the thing that we try to understand in class. How did whiteness come to pass as normal in class? Right, so there are two books that I'm going to recommend right now. Both of these books I either teach completely or partially in my classes. So these are books that are somewhat more scholarly in nature, but I pick them because they're also very accessible. They're written in a way which is really easy to read. They talk about anecdotal incidences which illustrate the point really well. So I found these two books to be friendly reading in some sense, and I think they do a really good job of explaining what we're trying to understand. Right, so the first book is called Racism Without Racists: Colorblind Racism and the Persistence of Racial Inequality in America. It's written by Eduardo Bonilla Silva, who is a professor of sociology at Duke University, and he was the president of American Sociological Association. So he's a very well-respected scholar. And the book, actually, the title is somewhat intriguing. He talks about how racism in the country actually has persisted without necessarily people being overtly racist. The idea is very much that since the civil rights movement in 1965, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, we've dealt legally with the official ways in which we used to discriminate and regard especially Black minorities as second-class citizens. So we've done away with the formal language of discrimination, but we have not really fixed the informal ways in which discrimination continues. Since then, actually, one of the most positive things that has happened in this country is that many people believe that racism is bad. Many people believe that people should be treated equally, and that they themselves do not engage in what they understand as racism. Right? So the book refers to the fact that how does racism go on even when people mostly understand that this is bad and should not be done. And so he points to one very important idea in saying that most people actually understand racism simply as overt acts of bigotry, you know, calling people racial slurs or discriminating outright in the basis of race and things like that. And so he says that this is, of course, progress, but it is not progress enough. And in fact, it has led to what we now say colorblind racism, right? It starts with people saying, oh, but I don't see color. I see you as a person, which is a good thing. I think that should be the eventual point of our lives where we all treat each other as, you know, valid people with ideas and emotions and respect each other. So certainly that's a good goal. But if you start saying that today, what we are missing is in fact that while we may be people equally, we're not equally respected or we don't have an equal voice in society, right? And so if there are white people saying, I don't see you as a black person, I simply see you as a person, what they're doing is negating the entire history of this person, the entire experience of this person as a black person, right? So what it actually allows white people then to do is to say, oh, I just see you as a person. I don't see you as a black person. And you're not doing that well in life. You're not making that much money or you're not getting that kind of education. So really, it must be your fault because we fixed the official inequality. So if you're not doing well, it must be your fault. Right. And so in that weird way, it allows racism to actually continue, even when the white person understands at a personal level that, you know, we should not treat each other badly and things like that, because there is a lack of understanding of how structural inequalities continue. This colorblind racism actually flourishes. Now, of course, the problem is, you know, so how should we treat each other? And that is the book is, of course, detailed and goes on in very different ways about how this kind of process continues. But his plea is that unless we understand historically how structural inequalities came to be and how today's situation continues those structural inequalities, we can never actually address racism fully. So even while individual people have gotten better at not being discriminatory or not using slurs and things like that, and I'm not saying people are pretending, I think people in this country have genuinely come to understand that racism is evil. Because they don't understand how society lets structural racism flourish, they're unable to fix inequalities. I think that is the main point of that book. The second book that I would recommend is called White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Race. And I think this book actually has been receiving a lot of attention very, very recently after the current protests. And it's by Robin DiAngelo, who's a professor of education at the University of Washington. And so what she calls white fragility, again, like I said, this book centers around whiteness. And she starts by saying that, you know, it's not enough for minorities to say things are going badly. It's not enough for minorities to say, you know, there is discrimination and there is inequality, unless white people actually engage in conversations with them, unless white people actually take these complaints seriously, that we may never be able to fix this situation. And she says one of the biggest problems that white people may face when they start talking about race and racism is what she has called white fragility, right? So white fragility, she explains, is basically the complete lack of ability that white people may have in dealing with what she calls racial stress. And what is racial stress? The idea is that when anybody starts talking about race, white people get really uncomfortable, especially when people start talking about whiteness as a race. White people get extremely uncomfortable. And they get extremely uncomfortable, again, because they understand themselves as people who are not racist. Right? So fundamentally, she says, white people understand racism as only sort of, you know, overt acts of racism, right? So again, the name calling, the lynching, the looting, the beating up, things like that. So they don't actually understand that there are other forms of racism, again, because this is the country we live in. We've come to understand those acts are bad. But they don't really see themselves as participating in a structure of race and in fact benefiting from their position at the top of the race pyramid, right? So white people don't actually think that they are benefiting by the current racial inequality because they see themselves as individual actors who, you know, work hard or are poor or go to school or whatever it is. And so when we start talking to white people about racial inequality, there are some very common reactions that they have. And primary among them is defensiveness, right? Because they're upset that they're being somehow labeled. So if you've heard about things like reverse racism, this, she would say, is one of the ways in which white fragility works. Because white people don't understand themselves as racist, they think any talk about race is racism. And that is just not true. So she says white fragility basically then demands, because, you know, their whole identity as white people is rooted in a very sort of liberal idea of being good people, being nice people, being, you know, non-discriminatory in general. And all of those things are true. Like, I'm not trying to accuse that white people aren't like that. But because they only understand themselves as liberal, good-intentioned people, they don't understand how their very social position is actually contributing to continued racism in this country. Right? So when we start saying things like, oh, but as a Black woman, I might understand. By the way, I'm not a Black woman. I'm just taking an example. So if you hear a minority person saying, but in my identity as a minority person, I have experienced such and such, white people are immediately offended or become worried or want to stop talking about it or are just deflecting the issue. Right? She says all of these are very common behaviors because, again, they center their identity as good white people as orienting themselves in their life. Right? So there are common ways in which white people react. And I'm just going to read you a couple examples because I think that, it just makes a really interesting reading. She says, suggesting that a white person's viewpoint comes from a racialized frame of reference actually is one of the ways in which they find this to be most challenging because they understand their view as objective, right? So if people talk about race, they have a particular identity politics going on. But if white people talk about their view, it must be objective. And I think that's where the problem lies, that white people don't understand themselves as people with racial identity. In fact, people with racial identity who are benefiting from that. And so the book goes on to say, you know, it sort of teaches us to identify this behavior. It argues for how this behavior is actually harmful. And it says something that I find really important in saying that the situation, racial inequality in this country, cannot be fixed by only minorities arguing for better change. It has to come with white allyship. And by the way, not just, you know, so this is my addition to it, not just white people saying that they want to be allies, but rather a deep inquisition of how every single white person benefits from continued racial inequality. So I think these are two really important books. I think there are some fantastic books on history of inequality and things like that, but I think I would want to center whiteness in this conversation because that's the part that we most often don't talk about.
This is a special edition of What We're Reading on KAXE and KBXE. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. Today we're hearing about books that speak to us about race and systemic racism. We're talking with Bemidji State University professors who work with these issues in their research and in their courses, and we're getting their book recommendations.
All right. Well, bonjour, everybody. My name is John Gonzalez. I am a professor of psychology at Bemidji State University. I'm also a member of the White Earth Ojibwe Nation right here in northern Minnesota. My sort of area of research has primarily been with indigenous communities and populations, first starting out a little bit with sort of Native identity and what that means and all of the factors that play into that, and then how that relates to, you know, basic psychosocial functioning and so on. I've also done research recently looking at microaggressions, particularly again with American Indian people, both in campus, school, education settings, but then community settings and healthcare settings and things like that there. I mean, pretty much, you know, all of my professional career has been focused on, you know, identifying the factors that, you know, have an impact on the disparities that American Indian people and people of color experience. I teach, well, basically in all my classes, I teach, you know, about issues of diversity and multiculturalism and certainly race and racism, oppression, all of those things sort of go into that. Even in intro to psychology, I introduce those topics right away as it relates to every single one of the different chapters and different sub areas of psychology. And then I teach multicultural psychology as well, which is, focuses on the psychology of diverse groups and populations and how each one of these groups are impacted by societal factors and so on and so forth. So it's a big part of basically my professional career. And, you know, I do end up, you know, talking about it a lot. And then also with Indian education, I mean, that's a huge part of the pie, I suppose, or the equation in terms of why Native people have such huge education disparities. You know, it has to do with race and racism and oppression and within our education system. So those are my sort of background and experience with the issue both, you know, and then of course, you know, being a Native person, I've experienced my share of those issues, you know, growing up and continue to kind of experience those. One book in particular that I would like to recommend is by Robin DiAngelo, who's probably more famous now for writing the book White Fragility, but that's not the book that I'm going to recommend. She wrote a book before that actually called What Does It Mean to Be White and Developing White Racial Literacy. So I would actually recommend that book before you even read White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. In this book, it really, you know, sort of starts at that first step that a lot of white folks should be thinking about in terms of, you know, doing, you know, social justice and thinking about what that means, is really sort of laying out the groundwork for, you know, again, what does it mean to be white in America, right? And, you know, she originally wrote this book starting off, you know, because she's an education professor. So she's, you know, that was her profession for the most part. So she originally, you know, sort of developing this and talking about this because almost all of her students were white that wanted to be teachers, right? So she, you know, in college, and she realized that most of them didn't really have any understanding of how race impacts their profession as a teacher. And the majority, well, not the majority, but a bunch of their kids eventually are going to be, our students are going to be, you know, not white. They're going to be students of color. So, you know, having a good understanding of what race is, what whiteness is, and the idea of whiteness and the ideology behind that. So she, you know, the first few chapters sort of deal with that in general, but then she goes through within this book and really sort of lays out, you know, this idea of how, basically defining the terms themselves in terms of race and racism, oppression, stereotyping, prejudice, you know, all of those kinds of things there. And then, you know, goes through and sort of takes you on a sort of journey about, okay, this is how we're socialized and how people in general are socialized into a society, right? In terms of how media works and how education works, how, you know, what our parents teach us about, you know, race or what they don't teach us about race and all of those kinds of things there. So she goes through and sort of lays this foundational work, both psychological and sociological foundation in terms of how everybody as a human being develops a set of assumptions, develops a set of biases, you know, incorporates these stereotypes into, you know, our worldviews and so on. And it's, again, it's just a psychological process that everybody goes through, right? And a lot of times we don't realize it. And especially if you're white, you don't realize it, right? You know, how powerful that actually is in terms of your socialization, right? So she goes through and sort of lays that foundation. And then she goes through some additional chapters, you know, really sort of, you know, talking about why is it so hard for white people to talk about race. And you know, lays out, you know, a bunch of different sort of factors, again, part of our socialization. There's some real key ones that I would, you know, sort of address, that she addresses. And the first one is this binary that we're all taught about race and racism in particular, right? Where, you know, we're taught that racist is bad and not racist is good. So we easily sort of, you know, of course, no one wants to be seen as a bad person, right? Most people are good people, right? And they think of themselves as not racist. And that's sort of the terminology that we use, is that, well, I'm not racist, right? I'm not racist, because we, you know, we put it into a binary that not racist is good and, you know, racist is bad. But that is sort of too simplistic, right? In the sense that, you know, it being not racist is, you know, not really good enough. And it almost sort of contributes to racism continuing to function in society, right? If you can easily say that you're not racist, then you become passive and you don't really do anything about it. And, you know, other than saying that I'm not racist, right? And believing that you're a good person. But again, racism is a system. It's not, I mean, it's individual people who act within the system, but it's really the system that creates the ideas of race and what it means to be white, what it means to be black, and what it means to be Native and Asian and Latino and all of, you know, the different racial categories that we have, right? So that's a really, you know, important part of this book. And then there's these other factors, you know, that make it really difficult for white folks to talk about race and talk about racism. So she goes through and talks about that, you know, within the book. And then she also has she does have a small chapter under on white fragility when she was first developing this sort of idea and this concept and starting to write about it. So there is a small chapter in there. But then she ends the book in a really nice way that really, again, pushes people and provides real world, real tangible things that people can do to move from being not racist to being anti-racist, right? In terms of being able to take action. And then, you know, really addresses all of the challenges that white folks in particular, again, have about trying to even talk about race and trying to even have a conversation about it, and all of the feelings, you know, like, for example, being, you know, feeling guilty about it and having this idea of white guilt, you know, that goes along with that. That's sort of one of the initial reactions that white folks have. So she walks through examples in terms of how you can deal with that. And again, she's a white woman, so it's a white woman writing to and talking to other white people, right, about this. So it's a really powerful book, and I would recommend that for anybody. It's, you know, it's in its revised edition. It's probably about 4 or 5 years old, maybe a little bit more than that, but it's still very applicable to, you know, what is happening today. So that would be my, you know, my primary recommendation for anybody who's interested in, you know, sort of just taking those initial steps. And then even, you know, I mean, even for people who are in, you know, who already are like-minded and sort of thinking in terms of social justice, it's a very good resource. It provides you with language, it provides you with concepts, it provides you with sort of counter arguments, you know, to people who say that, well, I'm not racist, and to try to argue, you know, about different ways that racism functions and things like that.
Woke up to the morning sky first, baby blue, just like we rehearsed. When I get up off this